Good morning. Joining me now is our friend Al Batt from somewhere near Heartland, Minnesota. Good morning, Al.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, everyone. It's another top shelf day. I had to, I was in the shed and I heard raindrops falling on the roof. It was a pleasant sound, one that, I hadn't heard for quite a while. Had to relearn how to use my windshield wipers in my car because it had been so long since I did that. And I spoke at, on Sunday, to the Norseland, let's see if I'm going to get all the words in there, Norseland Community Preservation Association. And boy, that was a big topic, how much rain we got, and it was how pleasant it was to get some rain. We've been in that drought map for a long time, and maybe we'll be able to get off that one of these days. It sure would be nice. So it was wonderful just being involved with the rain. I walked in the rain. There's songs written about that. I had a roommate who would just go out and sit in the rain. And now I find myself, when we get some rain, I walk in it. I just kind of enjoy it. I also, thanks to those good folks at Norseland, I also want to thank the Minnesota River Valley Master Gardeners, who just had a wonderful program. Karen and her son Grant, did a wonderful lily presentation.
Well, thank you.
And Micah brought some cookies for everybody, and what a wonderful guy. There, I have a question. There was a bioluminescent flower, which the emission of light from living organisms, the one we think of right away is fireflies, and it's a result of what internal, typically oxidative chemical reactions. But there's a flower, but I don't remember what it was. Do you?
You know, I don't remember either. I just know that when she mentioned it, it's a really new thing, and it's only available from one place in northern Wisconsin. So it sounded a little iffy to me, but I'll check it out and research a little more. But Johanna George was one of the speakers, and she was talking about new introductions, and she had read about it or heard it about it from somewhere herself, and so she mentioned it. Of course, everybody is really excited, but we don't know much about it or if you can even get it at this time. You know how it is. We were talking about lilies and how it takes so long by the time you get one to market from the time you plant it. So I don't know that the bioluminescent glowing in the dark flower is available yet, but I'll check on that for you, Al.
Yeah, it just, I just can't imagine having flowers glowing in my yard. It sounds like it'd be really cool, but then, and maybe a little creepy to people that were driving by or something. But
maybe
would be so neat.
You think maybe they just let the glowworms crawl up the stems and then they glow?
Maybe that's it. Yeah, it attracts fireflies or something.
I don't know.
It goes that way. I know you talked about a lily that it's just 7 years to really get it to growing well.
Yeah, the martagons are the ones you can plant in a little shade, and they're the first ones to bloom in the garden. But, you know, if you're going to develop one from the time you grow it from a seed to the first bloom is something like 7 years. So you got to wait a long time and have patience before you even know if it's worth, you know, even multiplying some more.
I'm going to stick with dandelions.
They're quick.
I don't put much effort into them, you know, and they bloom every year.
Yeah.
They bloom early. They bloom long. I went for a walk again in the rain, and there was a robin singing cheerily, cheer up, cheer up, cheerily, cheer up. It made it a good morning because it was raining, and a lot of flowers now are sticking their noses out of the ground to sniff the spring air. And I wondered what a wet squirrel smelled like as I watched one move through the wet trees like a mini Tarzan without a vine to swing on. And I tossed some millet onto the ground for the native sparrows in kind of a dry place where they could get a little out of the rain a little bit. And juncos enjoy that seed, and their gray and white bodies covered the seedy ground. Between those snowbirds and the American tree sparrows, there was little room for anything else, a couple of song sparrows, a few purple finches and house finches. But there was one more species. I watched this double scratch behavior of a handsome fox sparrow. And he used a backward kick it performed simultaneously with both feet to find food in the leaf litter. I wanted to give that a try, but I was afraid I'd fall beak first into the scattered millet, so I didn't. But each time I see fox sparrows, I want to do for them what the trashmen did for the surfing birds. Dale Waltz of Rochester saw a bald eagle nest near Geneva Lake. Jim Grotti, a wonderful guy from Fairmont, said there will be no birdhouse making by the Martin County Conservation Club this year.
Aww.
He said he and Steve Maurice are tired and a lot of their equipment is wearing out,
aww,
so they're going to hang it up. So just thanks to those. And at the end, I think it was, I hope I'm right on this, that it was just those two pretty much, but they had more doing it before. So thanks to all of those at the Martin County Conservation Club. Donna and Dwayne Swenson of Wasika saw some sandhill cranes and asked me what would be the best field guide, the best book, paper. For years, I was a National Geographic guy. I just loved the National Geographic, and I will admit part of it is because that's what I was used to. I liked using that, and you feel at home. There's a comfort level, but I think the best one is Sibley, the Sibley Guide to Birds. And here we'd want, if you want a smaller field guide, one to carry around with you, it'd be the Eastern, so the Sibley Guide to the Birds of Eastern Birds.
Now, Al, when are they going to change all the names so you'll actually need to get a new book anyway because all the names of the birds are going to be changing? So should we get those ones even though all the names are going to be changed soon?
Yep, get it and wear it out.
Okay.
And by the time you get it worn out, then they'll have the names changed. I'm thinking it's going to be an elongated process. I could be wrong, but I can imagine there will be arguments over the names, and no, you can't name it that, and that sounds like something else, and it'll be confusing to people, and they're trying to make the appreciation of birds simpler and easier.
Well,
so I'm thinking there'll be committees. If you've all been on committees, you know how that goes. They always said football is, it combines two terrible things in life, violence and committees, and that's what a football game is. So,
well, Al, anything like our state flag, I can only imagine. Now, that was one thing, one state flag. Imagine all those different birds by committee.
Oh.
What a chaos is that's going to be?
It is, and if it's a big bird in your state, an important bird, and all of a sudden you're changing the name, and there's going to be a lot of effort and things in there. And when I said that about committees, I am on several committees, so I of course wasn't talking about the committees I'm on, which are wonderful committees and improves all kinds of great things. Sibley also has a big book, a heavy book that you can plop down by your easy chair. It's a wonderful book. It has drawings of young birds, drawings of how the birds look when they're in non-breeding plumage in the wintertime as opposed to what they look like in the spring and summer, and it's just an incredible book. So I highly recommend the Sibley Guides. And David Allen, he's a nice fella, too, so that helps, David Allen Sibley. Ruth Olson of Glenville saw a common loon. I have not seen one, Ruth. So, I mean, I've seen them other years, but not this year. Carol Bertelson of Albert Lee saw some sandhill cranes. Karen Sundell Bartz said it's so cool to see a great blue heron. Kent Spellman sent me a thing, and I'm not sure what this is from. I'm sorry, Kent. But it says, remembering 21 species lost on October 16th, 2023, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service finalized a rule removing 21 species from the list of species protected under the Endangered Species Act because of extinction. The extinct species include 8 of Hawaii's precious honeycreeper birds. So, the brittled white eye, and there's a little Mariana fruit bat of Guam. There's a fish in Texas. 9 southeastern mussels. And sadly, the Bachman's warbler. So they joined the list of 650 U.S. species, 650 U.S. species that have likely gone extinct. we always think it's that's something that happens somewhere else. But boy, if you're in Hawaii, you lose 8 honeycreeper species. Jerry Victoria, Jerry's from Allendale. He said, I've been reading A Diary of the Confederate Soldier by William C. Davis, and he sent me this from that book. It says, we have concluded to build a house for winter and have been cutting and hauling pine logs for the purpose today. The troops had 4 pounds of sweet potatoes issued today in lieu of bread. Hard up Ike, and who has been over to the cavalry camp, says they are worse off. He says the spur gentry are culling down old trees and robbing the woodpeckers of their winter stores of acorns, to the great discomfiture of the red-headed foresters. Says he saw an old woodpecker. He had an old woodpecker. You know, spelling wasn't a big thing in those days, so okay. This is the fellow's diary. So there's a couple words. I'm not really sure what he meant to put in there, but what he's saying is the woodpeckers were complaining to the cavalry to leave the stores alone. And in times of war, this isn't from the diary, this is from me, in times of war, some soldiers used ground acorns as a coffee substitute. And acorn coffee was made during the American Civil War, and also the Germans made their own version during the World Wars, calling it ersatz coffee. And it requires a leaching process. But acorns could serve as a highly nutritious substitute in any recipe where you need are going to use cornmeal. And acorns are also used in flatbreads, tortillas, cornbread-type confections, pancakes, and honey cakes. So it looks like a real interesting book. Tom Jessen, our friend TJ of St. Peter, who I talked to yesterday, he had a 4.5-foot western fox snake, and it is going to the Hormel Nature Center in Austin.
Great.
So you found a nice home. And this is a snake, it lacks rattles, but the fox snake can make a rattly sound when it shakes its tail or when it's in leaves that will, it'll get people to perk right up when they hear that or see that. And every so often folks will say, well, I saw a rattlesnake, I saw it here. Mm. And oftentimes it is this western fox snake.
And they're harmless, too. I know a lot of people get really frightened because sometimes they're a little bigger. But TJ is the best snake guy I know. He's so kind to them. As I was getting ready to do landscaping things for this year, I looked with dismay as I saw they have mats, to keep seeds down to prevent erosion.
Oh, yeah.
But they have all that netting in there. And as TJ would say, and I have found out, that is the worst thing, and it kills so many snakes and other creatures. It's got that little netting, and what they do is if they try and get through, they get stuck, and basically the circulation's cut off. So don't use that stuff. I just want to do a little PSA there for you.
It's not good for a number of things, but snakes, it's just terrible. Don Hermanson of Northland showed me a photo, and it's of a black bear in a culvert. And he figured it was about a 100-pound black bear and having a nap in a culvert over in that area. Jennifer Vogt Erickson. Jennifer's from Albert Lea. She showed me a photo of, I don't know, I'm just going to go with many turkey vultures perched in the trees in a cemetery. There's a Catholic cemetery and the Pioneer Cemetery in Albert Lea, and they every year they come there.
Hmm.
So it's tradition for these turkey vultures. And it gets some people to wondering, all those turkey vultures posing in a cemetery. And there was Charles Adams, who was one of my favorites. It was a cartoonist for the New Yorker magazine forever. And the Adams Family TV show was spun off his cartoons.
Oh.
And it looks like when I see those pictures, I think of a Charles Adams cartoon, because that's what he would have drawn, vultures in a cemetery or something, because he was a little bit on the kind of the morbid side with his with these cartoons.
Before you go on, I got to ask you about cemeteries, because we went to Wisconsin this past weekend to celebrate my uncle's 90th birthday. And on the way there, we passed a number of cemeteries in Wisconsin, and they have what I call cemetery trees. And they are those really super tall, narrow arborvitaes that's why I refer to them as cemetery trees, because that's the only place I ever saw them back in the day. I'm wondering, do turkey vultures like them? Because I know a lot of other birds love them because they can hide in them.
Yeah, I don't think they do. They like the ones with the good heavy branches, because they're a pretty big bird. They don't weigh a lot, but they don't want to be bending them over. And you know, when I was a kid, I'd see those in cemeteries we'd visit in Iowa, but they were always kind of right by the gate when you went in. They were like marking the entry, sort of an arbor-like thing when you went into the cemetery.
So, in Wisconsin, they put them all throughout. So growing up when I started to do some landscape, I'm like, well, I don't want to have cemetery trees in the yard. People think I live in a cemetery. So I tried to avoid them, but that's just maybe a Wisconsin thing. Hey, I've got another thing I want to talk about going from Wisconsin, coming back. We went on Highway 8 because I went back home to Amory, and we saw dozens and dozens and dozens of huge, those big white swans. I don't know what the big ones are. I mean, they're big as a small Volkswagen, I swear. But are they on the move or are they living around there? But it was all along Highway 8, different marshy, wet spots. I noticed just so many of those.
Yep, they are nesting there and around here, and those are trumpeter swans, and they'll be over 25 pounds. Oof. Boy, they could be nearly 6 feet long if you went from the tip of the bill to the tip of the tail when they're flying. And a wingspan, 7 feet maybe.
Wow.
They are huge, huge birds. And, oh, you know, the ugly duckling, little cygnets are the cutest things on earth. They're not an ugly duckling, I don't think. But I love seeing them. I saw quite a few. Probably 7 or 8 of them yesterday, and I saw like 3 pairs, and I think one was just one flying, but they're so lovely. Lynn Wasmone, a friend that lives in Emmons, Minnesota, sent me a photo of a shrike that had met its demise by colliding with a window. And a shrike in Minnesota in the summer is a loggerhead shrike, and one in the winter is a northern shrike, but in early April, who knows? They're often called butcher birds, as they're both a songbird and a predator of songbirds. And shrikes sometimes kill more prey than they need, but they don't let it go to waste. They store food for later by impaling their prey on the spines of trees or barbed wire. And the shrike's facial band, it has a mask, and that tells the tale as far as the ID goes. But I couldn't see on Lynn's photos where the mask met the bill in the photo. And Lynn just wanted to know what kind of bird it was. He didn't know I had to more than that. He just wanted to know it was a shrike, I think. A loggerhead shrike has a thicker eye band, and a northern shrike has a noticeably thinner eye band that doesn't extend over the eyes or above the bill. So if you can see that, I could have told him which one it was. You know, the Lone Ranger wore a mask to keep his identity a secret, but not being able to see a mask kept the shrike's identity a secret. Judy Tweeten of Heartland sent my wife a photo of she was wondering what kind of flicker it was, a northern flicker. And it's a flicker that's leucistic, so it just has on... It looks like when its wings folded, it looks like its lower back is white. So it's missing some coloration in its feathers. Vicki LaRoon asks, where can I get a good look at a sandhill crane? She and Tom are looking for one. So if any of you have one that will pose for photos or anything, let us know, and we can let Vicki know and make her, she'll be a happy camper. Brian Smith saw a semi-palmated sandpiper at the Sleepy Eye water treatment plant there in Brown County. I enjoyed everything at the Master Gardeners thing. Dr. Brandon Miller of the University of Minnesota, I believe he's in the Department of Horticultural Science in one area or another, said that the ginkgo tree is a good choice to plant where every other tree has died.
Yep.
So So you've been trying to plant that tree there. Now one died. You go and buy another one, and it dies. The ginkgo is a tree that can withstand poor conditions. And we have a ginkgo in our yard. I really like them. I see them as boulevard trees. But I don't know what. There was one city in the Twin Cities ended up planting female ginkgo trees.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and they produce seeds with these fleshy coverings. And when those coverings ripen in the fall, they produce a foul and pungent scent. I think Brandon said it was like dog's business. So it's the smell of dog feces is what these things are.
I think that's why they got a bad reputation for a while, because they were selling these female trees and the stink was so bad. And if they'd fall in your car, you'd get this horrible stink and stench around there. But the male ones do not produce that fruit. So nowadays, I think most nurseries and things are cognizant of that, so you don't get it anymore. I've got four in my lake house yard, and a couple of them are these dwarfs, because they've got these ones that are like maybe 3-4 feet tall, and I just love their leaves because they're such beautiful. They're like these thick fans, and they just are, I don't know, they're just cool.
And they drop them all at once.
Yes.
They'll have them all, and then all of a sudden the tree just says, you know what, guys, I'm going to let you all go.
Let's
rake. This is your last day. And then the next day they're all down, and it's a beautiful pile of these fans that are down there. It just, I think ginkgo trees are really neat. I like having them around. He talks about a lot of the trees that are great to have around here, and we're lucky. I do like... He liked the Kentucky coffee tree, which I also like. I have them here in the yard because they're people will come and they say, "What kind of tree is that thing?" You know, and then you tell them it's a native tree here, and they say, "Well, why is it called a Kentucky coffee tree?" And I say, "Well, I think Kentucky got the first opportunity to put a name on there, so they said we're going to name it after that." But we have the oaks and maples that we have are just wonderful, wonderful trees. We're all, I know, upset about the ash trees and the things that are going on and will continue to go on with them, and hardly any of that's good. I'm sure there'll be some, like there's some elm trees that they're breeding now that have an immunity to the Dutch elm disease, or at least a hope for immunity, and I'm guessing that'll probably prove true with ash trees. And somebody asked me there, how about the mountain ash? I'll miss those if go away, but they are not, as far as I know, the emerald ash borer leaves them alone because
they're different,
they're a different species. So we'll have those because they put out the berries, and boy, the birds love to eat them, and I'm just happy to see them. But hackberries are wonderful trees. He mentioned locusts. I don't know why I've never been a big locust guy. I think I planted one once, and they're beautiful trees. I just never.
Walnut trees. Why did he say he didn't like them? I can't recall now.
I think in some areas they were probably overplanted.
Oh, kind of like some maples, you know, too, he said, were really overplanted. Yeah.
We like trees, and the county, we used to get trees from the county, and of course, one year they'd be all evergreens, and then the next year it'd be all this kind of tree. So you'd go down there, and you'd come out of there with 150 maple trees. And you don't want to... You want to plant them somewhere, so you're just planting them everywhere, and of course they reseed, and then you have maple trees everywhere, and they are beautiful. They mention Doug Tellamy, who has written a book about trees and how they help birds, and he always says the oak tree is the best because it's a caterpillar factory, so chickadees and things, that's where they can go. That's their restaurant where they stop. But maple trees are pretty good, too. Not as good as the oaks, but maple trees are right up there as well. And then, of course, oaks, we get acorns. And the deer eat acorns, and wild turkeys, and wood ducks, and squirrels, and chipmunks. And so many things eat those acorns. And as I just mentioned, humans, too, making coffee out of it. I'm not a coffee drinker. Otherwise, I might give that a shot.
That's what I was going to say. How do you make the coffee out of it? You know, normally it's beans. What would you do? Take the nut out of the shell and then what?
Yep. then you leach it like crazy. There's all different kinds of, and I'm guessing those guys, I know you can leach with cold water too, and that's probably what they were doing back then. But you know, when you're a coffee drinker and you don't get any coffee, you're going to try to make it out of whatever you can find around. Chicory was another thing that they would make coffee of, and chicory grows on our, when I was a kid, we called it blue sailors, those beautiful flowers that grow on our roadside. Yeah. And they would use a root and make chicory. And I have tried that, but I have to say up front, I'm not a appreciative person of coffee. I don't go, wow, that was really good.
Me neither.
So I thought it was bitter and kind of nasty, but it was probably good coffee. I don't know, but there's probably a reason that Starbucks does not have chicory. And now they say that they probably have it somewhere down south maybe or something. But boy, back then, the Civil War, you know, they just, like in that story, they got 4 pounds of sweet potatoes in lieu of bread, so they got no bread. So I imagine when they were getting those acorns, they were going to make it into a flatbread also, because we want bread, you know, with our meals. And how else would you sop up the gravy? Of course, they wouldn't have any gravy either, so that had to be hard. Those guys, what a terrible conditions, and if you got ill at the outlook was
grim.
Dismal if you were ill. So they were brave men. I can't. Every time I'm interested in the Civil War. Sometimes I'm just it makes me. I have to put the book down and kind of stand up for a while. Just everything they went through. I got a fax from a listener, and it just, there's no name on it, but it said, are ticks insects? Are they the worst insects ever? No, they're actually arachnids, which, so
spiders.
They'd be related to spiders and mites and scorpions. And how can you tell them apart from insects? You don't ask them, because they will lie. Ticks are noted liars. The best way to tell arachnids from insects is by the number of legs. Arachnids have 8 legs, whereas insects have only 6. Insects have 3 segments. They have a head, thorax, and abdomen. Arachnids have that just 2 segments, the abdomen, and then it'd be like a thorax on the insects. So it'd be cephalothorax. So they have 2 in arachnids, where insects have 3. So they are different. In ticks, I have not had a tick yet this year.
I haven't either. Nope. Cross my fingers.
They're just, I'm thinking with the nice winter that we had, that we might have a bad tick season. Unless you're a tick, then it's a good tick season. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But it just seems like that would be good. And I know I've talked about this before. Our dogs used to get them. Our cows would get them. Everything, every animal on the farm would get those things. And they were just nasty to deal with. Although as a little boy, we used to have tick races. So we'd put them, draw a little circle on the ground, and then we'd have them in a peanut butter jar lid, and then we'd flop them over and put a little fingernail polish or something on them so we could tell which one was whose, and then we'd bet a penny on who would win.
I think you've discovered a new activity for Heartland Days. It could be called Wood Tick Days.
Yeah. We used to have the cow flop. One of my jobs one year was to, I had, was it 4 hours? I had to sit by the cow to make sure it flopped in the right place and nobody came in and moved the cow flop. And I said, who is going to move the cow flop? And I said, well, you never know. But so the cow did nothing while I was there. It was just exciting to know, and watching that cow chew her cud. And she watched me while I'm reading a book. So nothing happened. I didn't have a square in the game, so I was I was qualified to be a guard. They didn't want to hire anybody. They didn't pay us, of course, but they didn't want to have anybody down there watching for cow flop that had a square there because they might move it. But I told them, I said, you would be able to see where it'd been if they move it, because it doesn't move all in one piece. It's not like it's a cow pie. It's pretty loose stuff yet. But that was I put it on my resume immediately. I said, this is going to look good. But I never got hired because I was a cow flop judge ever. So
well, Al, it's
cow flop bingo.
It was great chatting with you. We are out of time, however, and so I'm.
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
Well, hey, thanks everybody for sitting on the front porch with me. And I've learned rest areas are everywhere when you don't need one. Have you all found that? Saying, oh, it's got to be one up here.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. Each lengthy drive provides a rest area education. I learned this while resting in an area. I learned this. In 1837, John Deere developed and marketed the world's first self-polishing cast steel plow. The large plows made for cutting the tough American prairie ground were called grasshopper plows. Well, I walked around that rest area, remembering when I could go an entire day without taking a photo. Back in my parked car, I sent some online condolences via my phone. When I think about all the people I've lost, I realized I should have never been a tour guide. Remember, folks, heartlessness while we're driving past, do something wild today. Get out there and look at a bird. Thank you, Karen, as always. I appreciate your company.
Al, thank you. We'll be chatting with you next week. Thanks a lot.